From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Thanks for listening and for being a part of Jason Q's Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is the second hour of the program, and we had a terrific discussion with Barclay McGain, an up-and-coming rising star of economics through the Australian Taxpayers Alliance. Who would have thought you could actually say that on the radio, but it's very, very true. The amount of knowledge that Barclay's able to impart on all issues around the world is absolutely terrific, and he actually brought my attention to the test match today in Perth, Australia, versus the West Indies, not drawing a crowd at all, and it's led to a little bit of upheaval for these entitled cricket bat and ball players in all of this, hitting a ball around with wood for $2 million a year. Maybe we're all getting a bit of sick and tired of the privilege in all of it, as hard as it is that Australia's national sport is struggling. Steve Waugh's come out and said that it's too many meaningless matches. Well, they just finished a World Cup, Steve. I don't think it's that. It may well be that people are sick and tired of the hypocrisy and being told what to do all the time by people in great privilege. And speaking of people with great privilege, the Pfizer CEO is found guilty of making disgracefully misleading statements on child vaccination. Albert Baller has been found guilty of making these particular statements regarding child vax by a British pharmaceutical regulatory authority. Yet the lapdog corporate and mainstream media refused to acknowledge that any officials could find problems with the vaccine. It seems only the independent media is paying attention to the smackdown. So here's what's going on. Albert Baller is in hot water for claims he made during a BBC interview late last year about the company's then unapproved COVID vaccine for younger children. The claims have reportedly been branded misleading and overly promotional, with Fierce Pharma reported adding that the latest finding in an ongoing case at the British Pharmaceutical Marketing Regulator, the Prescription Medicines Code of Practice Authority, the PMCPA, the Telegraph reports in an interview with the BBC way back last year in 2021, December the 2nd, almost a year ago, Baller said, "There is no doubt in my mind that the benefits completely are in favour of vaccinating youngsters aged 5 to 11 against COVID." Following the interview, the PMCPA, the Parental Rights Organisation, Us For Them, issued a complaint to the PMCPA. Now, Us For Them is headed by its co-founder, Molly Kingsley, who was only on this program last week. And we've reached out to Molly to see if we can get her back on the program as soon as possible, which will be fantastic, because this is showing you that the people who are coming onto TNT are finally getting traction around the world to hold Albert Baller to account. From Molly Kingsley, from Us For Them, unbelievable. That's a 100 out of 10 effort from Molly, just as the Redfern Legal Centre here in New South Wales, in my home state, has managed to get 33,000 COVID fines ruled invalid. And Ben Falconer, who appeared on the program just a couple of weeks ago, the police officer in WA, had a victory with an injunction against the WA police force. 3 out of 3 for local grassroots effort. Congratulations to everyone, and keep listening. Now, radical far-left proponents like those at PBS continue to accuse people of pushing misinformation for talking about their concerns over vaccinations, especially on children, ignoring official statements about the science of the COVID-19 vaccine. Reporting from PBS, check out how they scold people and cover up any findings. They said, "Over the last 2 years, vaccination rates are plummeting, not just here, but across the planet, and doctors are worried." I'm going to pause and say BS. "For the first time in a generation last year, more than 25 million children missed out on basic vaccines. Health workers fear that without focusing greater efforts on increasing the rate of childhood vaccination, many diseases that were once under control may return." What are they talking about? Polio? What are they talking about? Measles, mumps, rubella? Measles, you used to get 3 or 4 days off school with some itchy bites, and that was about it. And it's interesting, if you actually have a look at that film Vax, the vilified movie by Andrew Wakefield, you'll see what the scam was in all of that you weren't allowed to know. And if you actually Google look up vaccine inserts, that is the warning labels for an MMR, you will see it's actually written on there that MMR may cause autism, despite every authority in the world denying this to your face. So when push comes to shove, these people will pay for their crimes. Now, in July, the UN's World Health Organization sounded the alarm and pushed the company messaging that all people needed all their vaccines, right? Well, and as we know, not all vaccines are created equal. Why do the scientists and therefore everyone else down the chain, from big pharma to doctors to politicians, bureaucrats, and the media, pretend that they are? This is compartmentalization in action. I do not step on your toes and you do not step on mine. Now, Big League Politics reported on the update, said Baller stated last year to the BBC, there's no doubt in my mind that the benefits are completely in favour of sticking children aged 5 to 11 with the experimental vaccine in order to justify pushing the death shots upon children. Baller claimed that COVID in schools is thriving. What a lot of rubbish. This is disturbing significantly the educational system, and there are kids that will have severe symptoms, he said. Come on. We know that 1 in 35,000 fatality rate here in Australia, 0 to 29 years of age, including all children of all comorbidities, and there are plenty of children who are sick and still no one is dying when 34,999 out of 35,000 who get COVID in Australia survive. There is simply no evidence that healthy school children in the UK are at significant risk from COVID, and to imply that they are is disgracefully misleading, the complaint said. Fantastic. Now, according to public research by Dr. Naomi Wolf, 44% of pregnant mothers who participated in the Pfizer vaccine trials lost their babies during the study. Wolf had analysed 300,000 pages of Pfizer documents with the help of crowdsourcing that were finally released in January. Pfizer took the death of those babies, those spontaneous abortions and miscarriages, and recategorised them as recovered result adverse effects. Just hold that thought for a moment and digest this. In other words, if you lost your baby, it was categorized by Pfizer as a resolved adverse event, like a headache that got better, Wolf said during an appearance on the War Room podcast. Even though it's well understood that these vaccines can be tremendously harmful to pregnant women, the SCDC still strongly recommends pregnant women to submit to the vaccine. And I know I'm running late for Darren, but here in Australia, there are nurses that are actively telling people now that they know it's the vaccine because they're causing deformities in children like cleft palate. And they're saying, we were told in our training from day one, and we've been doing this for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, that you do not give women anything during pregnancy, particularly experimental vaccines. And we deserve to be filthy dirty with these people. They've lost all their authority and they've lost any ability to be in power anymore. Now, why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all the major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out to discuss and cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
News and talk you can count on.
I can rely on that.
Today's News Talk Radio TNT.
And Darren, all the way from Plymouth, I bet the weather over there is cold enough now that he's going to have to wear 14 layers of clothing now that they've switched off his power, turned off the lights, and told us that his internet's only got about 3 minutes left. Tell us what's going on with the UK power surge amidst the collapse of wind power.
Yeah, other lies isn't just, they don't just lie about vaccines. They lie about green energy and wind power. And you're right, in the UK, there has been a massive dip in temperatures. It is easily hitting zero now at night. It was freezing this morning and it's dark. And now we're told that UK power prices surge amid collapse of wind power. A sudden fall in wind output triggered a spike in power prices in the UK, the world's second largest market for offshore wind power, which I did not know until I read this article. At the Epoch Spot SE, which is a power trading exchange for trading power and gas and electricity, some hourly power contracts rose above £1,200, which is about $1,400 US, probably near about $2,000 Australian dollars per megawatt hour on Tuesday, according to Bloomberg. Power prices for the 7:30 to 8 p.m. slot on Monday traded at £486. The day ahead auction cleared at £384 per megawatt hour, which is the highest rate since August the 31st. Wind power generation was projected to hit a low on Monday and is only expected to perk up by Thursday, according to this Bloomberg model. And it just goes to show, just a couple of days without wind power, just without wind, 3 days, and it causes a problem with prices. More than one third of the UK's electricity comes from gas, and the fuel is used to heat 85% of homes in the country. After Russia's invasion of Ukraine, gas prices have more than tripled. The UK only gets 3 to 4% of its gas from Russian sources, and it may have dropped right down near to zero now that we have this war. So this statement's a bit of a misnomer. Meanwhile, temperatures on Tuesday and Wednesday are predicted to be colder than earlier forecasts, which would raise demand for heating. The UK's National Grid had earlier warned that it may have to implement a demand reduction program on Tuesday that pays certain homes to reduce consumption. And the plan was, you reduce your energy use and you will be rewarded financially, which may well lead into things like a social credit system, digital ID, CBDC, smart meters, etc. in the future. But they have said, they did say on Monday that this plan would not be necessary, but it's in place now. In October, the UK government introduced an energy price guarantee measure which promised households using a typical amount of electricity and gas would only have to pay £2,500 per annum. So there was a cap put in place. Though the plan was intended to last for 2 years, the new UK government have now limited it to April next year. The administration then announced that the guarantee will continue with the price cap extended by £500 to £3,000 beginning in April. Price guarantee measure is expected to be a big financial burden on the government, the taxpayer. According to Cornwall Insight, implementing 18 months of this energy price guarantee will cost the administration £42 billion per year. This highlights the nature of the wholesale market risk that the government is taking on by deciding to extend the EPG, with the consequence that the full costs may be potentially higher than currently budgeted for, the principal consultant at Cornwall Insight told the BBC. According to the Office of Gas and Electricity Markets, a government energy regulator, households would have to pay £4,279 per year from January if this EPG scheme, this price guarantee scheme, was not in place. To help people who cannot afford to use heating at home, charities, community groups and other entities are opening up warm banks in cities and towns across the country this winter. Warm banks are places where people can go to heat up without paying. So they're all about using public spaces. People may donate their house to this program, libraries, places like that. More than half the councils in England and Wales are involved in either establishing warm banks or supporting the groups that are doing so. And who would have believed that the United Kingdom was a first world country? In fact, once upon a time, we had our own empire, Jason. And now we've got to heat up libraries so that we can ship in all the old people to stop them from freezing at home.
This is after we just spent the last 2 years vaccinating everyone to save the old people. It seems that the energy reduction plan that they're talking about should have the slogan, save yourself to death. How about that one?
It might not sell, but it would probably be a bit more accurate, Jason.
Yeah, truth in advertising, like Albert Baller, you know, bullshitting to the people to poison their children. It's just something else. These numbers, though, Darren, are truly extraordinary. £4,279 in Australian dollars, roughly $8,500 a year for power. That would represent approximately $165 a week, or about 80 quid a week for your electricity bill. These are astronomical numbers. And we're not talking about anything major other than just warming your home and keeping the lights on. Yep. and refrigeration. This is just next level of obscenity. But as we had on the program yesterday, both Joachim Hagopian and Topher Field, an Australian filmmaker and activist, and we were comparing notes in all of this, it seems that the attention span in politics these days means that no one's really getting a second term except for Daniel Andrews for some reason, but we're going to explore the voter anomalies down in Victoria on that one. But with the attention shifting so quickly, this green agenda might fall on its backside much quicker than we even we can expect. And it's obviously this winter is a huge one. We've talked about the German parliament, the turtlenecks and covering up, and I'm going to have Thierry Bourdais on in a moment. I'm going to ask him what's happening in the Dutch parliament in all of this by comparison. That'll be something else to behold amongst many other topics. But Darren, very, very disturbing news on a topic that normally is pretty plain, and we wouldn't necessarily cover it in as much detail as we've done now, but this is a big deal. Now, let me ask you, in your own proximity, your own neighbourhood, your own community, are you getting a feeling on the ground here when you go for a walk outside and go to the shops? Are people actually talking? Is this a conversation starter in just the normal community at this point?
When I'm walking around, I mean, amongst my friends, a lot of them now have smart meters. The way that the government or the way that they're being refunded or given money is it just gets loaded onto their smart meters. It's quite clear the aim is to get everyone on a smart meter. So at the moment, a lot of people aren't really complaining. The one thing I hear people talking about when they're walking around is Putin bad. I see old people chatting away in queues in a post office or on a corner, walking their dogs, and they're talking about, isn't it terrible in Ukraine? Oh, is Putin going to use nuclear weapons? Oh, the reason we've got this cost of living crisis is because of Russia. These are the things that the average person, even though it's probably to a lesser extent from what I see through social media, out on the street, the average person is just taking it on the chin, British stiff upper lip. They're getting reimbursed some money, so they think the government is saving them. We've seen all the love that's been poured on Matt Hancock for I'm a Celeb. So there are still people who are completely asleep, a term I don't like, and the narrative, whenever energy is discussed in the mainstream in the UK, it is always Putin bad. No mention of the previous 2 years and no mention that this is a cost of lockdown, not a cost of living caused by a war that we have no choice but to get involved in and send all our tax money to Zelensky and his wife. Climate change is the one thing that will wake people up. COP27, COP26 did more to wake people up than anything, but the average person really doesn't get to see it. You know, just my old elderly neighbors next door, they don't get to see any of that. In fact, they're still wearing a mask. So waking people up still has to be our priority. Hopefully, if it gets really, really bad with the energy prices and people are freezing and having to find libraries to warm themselves up, maybe more and more people will start asking questions.
Yeah, there you go. Good report, Darren. Now, quickly before you go, who you got on today?
I've got actually a friend of mine called Danny Bampin. He's a local non-practicing lawyer. He takes on the council. He's also an independent politician. So I'll be talking independent and UK politics at 11 a.m. with Danny Bampin.
Well done. Well, we're going to take a break. And after the break, Dutch MP Thierry Bourdais will be here. Can't wait to speak to him. Thanks, Darren. Where you're listening to TNT Radio.
Jeremy Nel on TNT Radio.
Essentially, the foundational hypothesis, I suppose, is that we're looking at mental illness and how it's been approached. Not so.
It's a difficult topic, but I suppose we'd start with what is mental illness? And
yes,
it is a social construction in the sense that I'm not saying the symptoms don't exist, but what causes those symptoms is the issue. I'm not applying any different logic here to the virology debates around things like COVID or AIDS. There's a huge literature now showing that what we call mental illness is socially constructed. There may be some organic basis to people's symptoms, a biological basis to them, or there may not be. They did qualitative interviews with patients and families, and they could show that the stresses and the strains within family networks preceded the emergence of symptoms, schizophrenia symptoms, for example, in patients.
Jeremy Nel and Germ Warfare on today's News Talk Radio, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Dismiss the talk of an amnesty. We've seen the biggest kill ever in medicine's history. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Thierry Baudet is a member of the Dutch Parliament and the founder and leader of the Forum for Democracy political party. He's a leading international voice in the battle for freedom against global governance. He's the author of 12 books, including The COVID Conspiracy. And I welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. Welcome, Terry.
Hello. Good afternoon for you and good morning for me.
Welcome, and it's wonderful to have you back on the program. It's only been a little while since we last spoke, but it just seems that so much is happening around the world. Before we sort of get into the conversation, are you feeling more or less confident that we're going to eventually win in all of this?
Well, I'm still of the same opinion as we discussed a couple of weeks ago. I have my moments of hope, and then I've got my moments of despair. It really goes both ways, very much on this side here in the Netherlands. I watch the news about Balenciaga, for example, and that's such a thing where you have this moment where you feel, hey, are people waking up? I mean, is something happening? And then silence. So I'm really not decided, my friend.
Yeah, I really appreciate your candidness in being able to share your true feelings, and for many of us that are fighting for not just the freedom for ourselves but for our entire planet in the age of free speech being switched off. It certainly is an up and down a roller coaster. I had a writer on the program yesterday, a fellow called Joachim Hagopian, who writes. He was a West Point graduate, went to military school with David Petraeus, Lloyd Austin III, left it when he realized that the military was nothing more than a setup to fail, even in the US, became, would you believe, a child psychologist. So he's writing stories on what you're saying about this particular fashion company, and at the same time reporting what's going on in Ukraine and Russia, and linking the two with the child trafficking, these disgusting crimes against humanity. That we're seeing. And Terry, you're one of the very few elected members of parliament around the world that's not brave enough, but clearly someone who is not beholden to a system that prevents you from speaking truth. And this has made you somewhat of an outcast, but at the same time, somewhat a hero in the movement, someone that people can look up to and find strength in the work that you're doing. So as hard as it is for you, know that there are millions around the world that are on your team and will be there through thick and thin. And some of the best researchers in the world are the people that I'm meeting constantly on social media and in various other parts. And I'll tell you this right now, 90% of them are mums at home, mums of children, who many of them have now taken their children out of school for obvious reasons concerning the vaccine, but their research skills are impeccable. And when push comes to shove, they will become the new media. I can almost feel it in my bones.
Wow. I love this pep talk, man. Excellent. I will tell you, I'm actually in the car right now. I'm on my way to Parliament. And I'm going to give a speech. I'm about to give a big speech in Parliament. And it's about a subject that might feel completely unrelated to the subject that we're talking about. But I think it's intimately connected. And that's speed limits and traffic control measures by governments supposedly to improve safety on the road. And this has been a great source of irritation for me, where you can never drive fast. You have these trajectory controls where you have to have a certain speed for 10 kilometers on end or something like that. And I've been convinced for a long time that all these traffic, the speed limits and everything, they've got just as much to do with safety on the road as the COVID measures had to do with public health. Or climate change measures with climate change. These are, it's not related to improving safety. It's increased control by the government over our lives, over our free movement. And you can just feel it when you're on the road in a car that you are being reduced to something that they want to keep track over. And of course, from 2025 onwards, all new cars that will appear on the European market, I think this also applies to the United States, will have a tracker where speed maximums cannot be exceeded anymore. And also your car can be switched off by the police automatically. All these things. And I think it's so important to not just bang on about the main topics that we have been talking about for a long time, like Ukraine, COVID, climate change, immigration, transnational legislation, and so on. All these things are true. But it also, the monster also shows itself in the tiniest details, like all these regulations in traffic.
Terry, you wouldn't know, but this is one of my pet peeves and has been for probably 30 years when I was a student going to university and reading the newspapers, particularly here in my home state of New South Wales. There was a member of parliament, his name was Paul Gibson, and he ran a committee called the Stay Safe Committee. And every week there'd be another story in the media about how they wanted to reduce this speed and that speed limit and this for safety and that for safety. And of course, that was his role. Many years later, I joined that political party and actually became friends with Paul Gibson at the time. It was interesting, and he would still go on about these things, and I was quite young and wasn't too pushy, so I was a little bit subservient to what he was saying. But in the end, it was a comment that he made to me on an unrelated issue that resulted in me walking out of that political party, almost like what I call a Sodom and Gomorrah moment, like Lot. I did not turn my back. I walked out of a branch meeting, and I never heard from anyone in the party ever again. It was the best political move I ever made in my life. But I was asked to do something that I knew that was unsavory. I would call it corrupt, and it involved supporting one political leader over another one, who it turned out that the kingmaker himself went to jail for corruption. So my spidey senses were absolutely spot on. I want to talk to you more about this speeding stuff a little bit more. This is a big pet topic of mine. We're going to pause for news headlines and come straight back and get back into it here with Terry Bourdais on the TNT radio.
We're ready.
News.
News is our business, and we never close. Never close.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a check of your TNT headlines. Twitter's new CEO, Elon Musk, has picked a public fight with Apple for charging software developers a 30% fee for in-app purchases. NATO has announced it's strengthening its presence across Eastern Europe from the Black Sea to the Baltics as it steps up its support for Ukraine. And Britain's new Prime Minister has declared China a rival, saying the days of close economic cooperation with Beijing are over.
Did you know there are many ways you can listen to TNT Radio? Why not stream us direct from our website on your desktop, tablet, or mobile device? Or download our app from the App Store? We even stream live on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
And we're back, and I'm just looking at the speed limit signs in the Netherlands, and you have a 130 kilometre per hour speed limit on the highways in Australia. We only go to 110 kilometres an hour, but they are obsessed with speed limits here in this country, where we not only have cameras everywhere, traffic lights, side of the road, but we have mobile speed cameras that are civilian motor vehicles that are run by a private bank, Macquarie Bank, that's in control of those, and people are getting pulled up and getting tickets in the mail 3-4 weeks later for doing something like 62 in a 60 zone. And something that I find quite horrific is the obsession that they have to tell you that they're going to give you a random ticket in the mail for probably $100 or $200, and you lose demerit points as well on your license for doing 62 and a 60. But 59, Terry, it's perfectly safe. It's impossible that the average driver with the quality of motor vehicle from old jalopy bomb to brand new state of the art, from a 18-year-old child to a 95-year-old driver to a middle-aged person who's skilled, this lowest common denominator zero risk mentality is crazy. Our former Prime Minister Tony Abbott, he made a very interesting claim at a recent CPAC event, and he said, we've got to stop this neurotic fear of death.
Yeah, well, that's one element. We've got to stop the neurotic fear of death, but it's also something else. We've got to stop government's obsession with increased control over our lives.
Yes.
And we really need to start talking. And this is something I've been so surprised about, conservatives not having this as one of their major talking points. I mean, this was the case in the 19th century always, but now it sort of has gone from our awareness. But we want the government out. We feel that people have the right even to fuck up their lives. That's my view. If you want to eat unhealthily and live an unhealthy life, then that's your right. It's fine. It's okay. We can advise you to do otherwise, but it's not a business for the state to regulate it. And that seems increasingly to move out of the public imagination.
This is such a point, isn't it? Because if we're going to allow cigarette smoking and alcohol drinking without any limits, how can we be so pedantic about things like speed limiters on cars going forward? I mean, what do you do in Germany, for example, when you have an Autobahn where you can drive at any speed? Are you going to get a special permit on an Autobahn, for example, or are they going to drop the speed limit on the Autobahns over there? How would that even work?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing that I'm going to mention in Parliament is that research shows that the German Autobahn parts with no speed limits actually cause less deadly accidents than those parts of the Autobahn with speed limits.
Yes.
And one of the sources, one of the reasons for this is very obvious. When I'm driving and I'm just thinking about whatever I'm going to do that day, and maybe I'm on the phone with someone, and then all of a sudden, I see all these signs, and I have to lower my speed, and I have to move to another lane, and there's a trajectory control, and you know, all these things that it's very dangerous. Actually, the government, by trying to minimize risk, they are actually increasing risk.
Indeed. In Australia, there, in one of our drive-in programs, when somebody loses their license, they're often encouraged or they're told to go along to a driver education thing. And I'll hesitate to call it a re-education. I think that's just a bridge too far when we talk about that type of stuff. But sending someone to a driver education course is probably not a bad idea, particularly young, inexperienced drivers that get caught for drink driving or speeding at 180 kilometres in a 100 zone, things like that. I think it makes a lot of sense. But
sure.
The point I'm getting to here is that the police trainers that actually do these courses, and I was told by a friend who attended, they said that the number one cause of all accidents is simply driver inattention. And so they go on to explain that when you're distracted, that's when things go wrong. And it makes total sense. And that's why they have obviously rules about mobile phones in cars. But they do take it to a point where it's absolutely ridiculous. My late stepfather used to tell me that when he drove from Sydney on the east coast of Australia to West Australia through Perth, he drove on the Nullarbor Plain. This is a road that's thousands of kilometres long and it's dead straight and there's nothing to see for thousands of kilometres, completely sand and a road. He told me that he used to read a book whilst driving to keep himself awake. How's that for a perspective?
I love that. I think it's also something that can be a great source of joy in our lives.
Yes.
To be in your car and to drive somewhere, to feel that freedom. And it's very important that we should be on the side of the good life, I think, movements like ours. We are the ones, we're not the frustrated, regulatory, busybodies who want to control every part of everybody's life. We are not the socialists who are angry at people making money, having a proper business. Now we are the ones for the good life, the joyous part of life, and this is certainly one of them.
Yes, indeed. Now, with this speech that you're delivering today in Parliament, will you be making that available on your Twitter or on your website?
Yes, and we're probably also going to arrange English subtitles. We're doing that with most of my speeches. They can be found on Forum for Democracy International. So that's on YouTube. It has a website, it has a Twitter account, a Telegram account. And I always love it when people from abroad reach out, and we try to get in touch with as many people globally as possible to really start getting this movement into a state of self-awareness, because that is what I've been encountering so much. Each of us felt for years that they were apparently on their own. Oh, I'm the only one. Oh, well, apparently nobody else feels this or thinks this. But there are so many of us, but we just need to reach out. We're all over the place. We're in Brazil, we're in New Zealand, we're in Europe, we're a bit everywhere. And that's why I'm so grateful that you are inviting me on the show.
Well, it's absolutely wonderful to have you on, as I said earlier, and it's very important that we continue these discussions and show our collective power together from all corners of the world. It's something else, isn't it, that you can think that in this day and age, the one beautiful thing about the internet is that we can certainly link up and share knowledge. One of the things that I've always focused on in this information war that we're in, and of course it does expand to other areas, is on outcomes. And whilst all of these tragedies, the COVID has led to the vaccine passport, which is leading to the digital ID, which is leading to the central bank cryptocurrency, and we might talk about all of this in a little while, but it seems that through the World Economic Forum, that's literally stitched up thousands of companies around the world to be partners with them, and all these politicians, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that they have a plan for where they want to go. And whilst this may all be manufactured, architecturally designed, false flag driven, all of these things that we can talk about in great detail, it seems that on our side of the fence, whilst we do want our freedoms restored and our sovereignty maintained, I don't know if there's enough of a conversation on the good side of the outcomes that we want, an alternative plan to a one-world government, to a single thing. And I think this deserves a lot more attention as well. And I think it will also excite people, because what we propose is truly brilliant and freedom, and we're talking about a wonderful new world embracing technology for good rather than for our control. Terry?
Yes. Yeah, this is spot on, and it's always the challenge not only to talk about what we don't want, but to explain to people and to ourselves even the thing that we do want, and to live live the life that we feel is important. I will give you another example. I just set up a new company last week. It translated into Dutch or English, the name is Honest Food. And yes, it gets food directly from farmers into your home. So it gets delivered in boxes with recipes created by cooks and experts on nutrition and so on. And you get the best products directly from the land. The marvelous thing is you pay less than you would pay in the supermarket, because the supermarkets are making huge profits. It's fresh. You live with the seasons. You know exactly where the stuff that you're eating is coming from. And anyone can subscribe to it in the Netherlands. People can subscribe to this service and thus start living more healthy lives, have more original recipes, feel more connected to the farmers who have been under tremendous, tremendous stress here in the Netherlands with ridiculous nitrogen regulations and so on. So this is an example. I think this can really improve lives. It can make things better for people. It can show people the kind of alternatives that we would like to be implemented across the board. But you can't just do it right like today or tomorrow. People can start these things.
It's wonderful, because the concept here of Honest Foods is presenting immediately, from my observation, is that it's an insurance policy, one, to get access to clean, healthy, local food, which means you're not going to run out. You're going to be close to the food source. It's also for best health practice, because you're eating healthy grown food. And of course, the Netherlands is known as if not the leading food producer on the planet. It's certainly up there. And the other thing it does is, like you said, seasonal food. This is how the best restaurants operate. They only use fresh produce. So when you're saying that you're supplying recipes from cooks and experts, you are literally bringing the restaurant to your own home and becoming more skilled in the process. More power to you. I can't wait to see more of this, and I'd love to see it duplicated around the world. And I know that there are many things happening in our country here in Australia similarly, but it seems that you've just got that little bit of a step ahead. Now, can you comment on this story that some 3,000 farms in the Netherlands are being forced to close to meet some sort of energy requirement? Is this accurate?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, this is a ridiculous thing. It's very complicated actually to explain, but because of an intertwinement of EU regulations and Dutch environmental standards, a ridiculous threshold of nitrogen emission has been set. And of course, nitrogen is a nutrition. So if you have more nitrogen, you get more trees and more healthy, fertile ground, in fact. But because of standards that we want to protect the number of hay and moss and clover and things like that, the government feels obliged to lower our total nitrogen emissions. And as a consequence, they've embarked on this ridiculous program of disowning and expropriating the farmers. And that's why we've had a lot of protests in the Netherlands. But the government is just pushing through. And we are, therefore, currently in the process of losing our position as the number one food producer and exporter in the world. And we're going to be probably very dependent on food from abroad to import and to feed our own people.
This is
it's a combination of things. It's completely insane, the bureaucratic background of these measures, with the nitrogen being problematized because we have to save certain hay and other things. That's just it's not correct. But then the second thing is that there seems to be this complete unawareness among the political class that if you take away people's connection to the land and their food production, you make them so dependent on international supply chains, you make them dependent on globalist schemes. And some people say this is precisely what they want, but it certainly is very scary if you imagine being a population that cannot feed their own children anymore, that are dependent on production from abroad. People don't want that, but it's being forced on us right now, and there have been lots of protests in the Netherlands. But hey, the government just pushes it through anyway.
And this is the point, isn't it? It's unbelievable to think that you would give up the number one industry that represents around the world to satisfy someone else's agenda. For mine, it's an absolute betrayal of nationality, of nationalism at the very same point, but all this seems to be overlooked. Let's pause for a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to have more here with the leader of the Forum for Democracy, Terry Bourdais, on TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
What better way to celebrate Thanksgiving than by publishing an article called We're Thankful for Our Abortions, written by Nakia Natale, an attorney and an abortion storyteller. The piece appeared at TheNation.com. She trashes the holiday by calling it an unforgivable genocide of Native Americans, trashes America too, but lucky for her, she's able to look to her past and be most grateful for the abortions that she has had, both of them. I kid you not. She quotes 8 women from a group called We Testify as they express how they too are so very thankful for killing their babies. Yes, it's one big celebration. Most of them have had more than one abortion and express no regrets. One of these beauties is quoted as saying, "We have to get to a point where we don't care what people think. The silence hasn't gotten us anywhere, and it's rooted in abortion stigma. If you prioritized yourself and you know that you did the best thing for you, it shouldn't matter what anyone else thinks." I wonder how many of these women have ever even considered the babies that they kill so that they might pursue school or a career. Let's call them the witches of We Testify. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Interview conducted at 10:15. Present are Sergeant Jones, PC Clough, Mr. Wall, an uninsulated cavity wall, and his solicitor, Mr. Bent. Do you understand the charges?
I shall be speaking for Mr. Wall on account of him being a pile of bricks.
Right, you're accused of wasting energy, Mr. Wall, and we've got concrete evidence. We know that unfilled cavity walls are responsible for up to a third of all home energy wastage.
We also believe you're involved in a fencing operation.
We're going to throw the book at you.
Okay. Mr. Wall would like to say ouch.
It's criminal to waste energy. To find out how to save up to 25% off your heating bills, visit saveenergy.co.uk or call 0845 727 7200.
If you're talking about it,
what is going on the border today is different than it's ever been.
We're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back, and it's amazing to be able to compare notes to the other side of the world. The Netherlands has a population of almost 18 million people compared to Australia's 26 million people. The Netherlands has an area of just 41,500 square kilometres compared to Australia with some 7.5 million square kilometres, and completely different areas. And somehow in all of that, the Netherlands is the number one food producer on the planet. How is that even possible, Terry?
Well, I love our farmers. They've been extremely innovative, and they've been working very hard to make their companies more efficient. And of course, our climate is very mild too, so we don't have lots of snow or very, very hot summers. So that also helps. But I really think that our agricultural sector is extremely innovative.
Well, it must be to be able to produce that much food from such a small amount of space. And it should say that if we are the leader in the world at food production in such a small area, that we should be embracing it rather than trying to change it satisfy arbitrary numbers. And this is, again, I think, one of the most powerful things in the fact that we're able to communicate and compare notes, as I said, from around the world, because here in Australia, we only have two people per square kilometre in terms of population density compared to your somewhere over 420 people per square kilometre. It is just astonishing. And how is it that that at the same time we see that China and India have building power stations made from coal power and not participating, and yet Europe is the one at the centre of all this, moving into a what promises to be quite a cold winter without energy? And we saw only last week in Germany, which is a neighbouring country to the Netherlands, the politicians are wearing turtlenecks under their suits and shirts in Parliament because it's freezing cold in there. Are you seeing something similar in Netherlands?
Well, as it happens, I am wearing a turtleneck today as well. we're very much in the same situation. And the ridiculous thing is that in Groningen, which is in the north of the Netherlands, there is the largest natural gas field in the entirety of Europe. There is no natural gas field larger than the field that we have in Groningen. It's very easy to get out of the ground. It's very cheap. It's abundant, and politicians have decided to stop getting it out of the ground because of supposed earthquake damage. But then we've had a report, which in general it's true that there have been some ground turbulations as a consequence of getting out some of the gas. But we've had a report which predicted that the complete restoration of every possible earthquake damage and preventively making all the monuments and all the houses stronger and more resilient and so on would cost a total of $9 billion. Whereas under the ground, there's for more than 1,000 billion in natural gas.
Wow.
And yet they say the cost of restoring the damages of the earthquakes is too great to bear. And that's why we're not getting out our natural gas anymore. And that's why energy prices are now 13 times higher than they were a year ago. This is the situation in my country now. It's absolutely insane.
So how does
absolutely
the average...
ridiculous.
It is, but how does the average person make ends meet when the cost of just simple paying the bills for the utilities can go up by so much? Is there outrage in the general public on the streets yet, or are people still absorbing it and living in some form of cognitive dissonance?
Yes. Well, that's it. They're still absorbing it. They're in a state of cognitive dissonance. They're in a state of unbelief. Of course, the government, this is what always happens. This is a pattern I've seen. Government completely screws up a certain situation. So in this case, the energy prices. But then the same government steps in to promise people little presents, to say, oh, look, we're going to give you 100 euro back, and we're going to support you with this and with that. And the response of the people is gratitude.
Mm.
It's gratitude and not anger.
Yes.
And that's a very difficult mechanism to break.
It's very, very disturbing because it's a fairly new phenomenon. It's the idea that we have to be now dependent on our government. It's almost as if a socialism, almost by sleight of hand, if you will, it's been the ultimate trick. No, you can't think for yourself anymore. The government has some form of superiority because we are authority and you are not. It's like we've been deliberately led down a pathway to not trust our own eyes, not trust our own education, and not trust our own ability. So whilst you talk about the idea of how we like to live with freedom and even with risk, people become so scared by it, so fearful of it, that they can't even do that. And in many ways, for mine, it feels like that people are literally willingly committing suicide by following these plans and are cheering it on at the same time. It is becoming a living mental disease now. It seems to be that far down the track. And I don't like to over-sensationalize or even sensationalize here, but I can't see another way around it when people are willing to hand over their independence to a government body that they know has betrayed them in the past. It's a form of abuse.
Yeah. In any case, there's also this feeling that the people that are creating all these policies, they cannot be so stupid. Therefore, there must be a reason for it, right? This is what I encounter a lot with people that have university educations, academically schooled people. They have such esteem for authority figures. And they just cannot fathom the thought that perhaps these people are just messing about and are making the wrong decision, and that's just that's in some way apparently so scary to think that instead they are willing to sacrifice their own clear mind and close their eyes and just accept whatever comes at them. And maybe that's being trained from an early age onwards. Maybe that's what the school system is doing to people.
Yeah, it's a very good point. I used to make the comment that it used to be that university degrees were limited, but now there is a university degree for virtually every vocation that one might go and choose to do that doesn't require working with one's own hands in a form of a trade, for example. But because of this obsession with having to be tertiary qualified to literally do anything, it would make sense, therefore, that if people are committed in that sense because they need to get a job, committed in that sense because they've now got to pay for their tertiary education, that they would revere others that have got through the system and because they aspire to maybe take that role in the future. So it is a form of hierarchy by design here. So we are uncovering in real time the poison in the system. And so it is that innovation, entrepreneurship, areas that don't require a necessary skill set become considered to be such high risk. I once was involved in selling private education courses, and one of my trainers said to me, it's as simple as this. She said, the B students work for the government and the A students work for the C students. And I couldn't agree more, Terry.
Oh, yeah.
You look at that and you think it is absolutely obvious, isn't it? And you certainly have your work cut out for you, but it's wonderful that you're delivering a speech that others might not think is that important, but it really is, because the devil, as they say, is in the detail. And anyone who's fighting for the idea of taking away yet another freedom and introducing speed limit maximums on new vehicles from 2025, this is a bridge too far. And I wonder if it will be the motoring enthusiasts that will also now get offside. And one wonders about the motorbike enthusiasts at the same time. Imagine being able to ride a motorbike but never take it over 100 kilometres an hour. That just seems absolutely ludicrous. Before we run out of time, Terry, can you just direct people once again to where they can find your work on the internet? Sure.
So my latest book, The COVID Conspiracy, really is about all these issues. And it's appearing in January internationally. It was a number one bestseller in the Netherlands. It has been translated, and it's currently with the printer. So it will appear in January, and people can pre-order it on amsterdambooks.com, and it will be on Amazon and everywhere else in January. Then there's Forum for Democracy International. That's the website that we have with our international speeches, my speeches with English subtitles and so on. And Forum for Democracy International is also the title of our YouTube channel.
Wonderful. Well, that's excellent. That gives people plenty to be able to absorb and look into. And once again, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to me here on the program on TNT Radio. And I look forward to following the websites, the Twitter feed. And I forgot to even mention, and it must be liberating now that Twitter is becoming a little bit more free. But everyone, that is Terry Bourdais, the Dutch MP. It's wonderful to have him on the show. Rick Munn up next, locked and loaded. News next. You're listening to TNT Radio. Thanks, Terry.